Can you get loose with too much sex?
The easy answer to that is no, obviously, to us, but I think a very common misconception. Yeah, the vagina is made to expand and go back. It's like a rubber band, and you aren't going to change it. So, you know, I think a lot of guys actually, maybe I'm wrong, but sometimes they're like, you know, I take a little pride in that, but it's not true.
Yeah,
it's not true.
Right. And then, you know, I think when the term loose, right? It's really an essence of like your pelvic floor, right? And so like when your pelvic floor is weak, it can be perceived as a little bit, I guess, looser would be the term, but that's not related to how many partners you've had or how much sex you've had.
There are muscles there, and that's the primary makeup of the pelvic floor. And Kegels and things like that obviously help with pelvic floor support. So we care about that much more from like a well-being and life standpoint, because having a strong, healthy pelvic floor is important for continence, for just general how you feel sitting and getting standing. And so, yeah, I mean, shout out to the pelvic floor physical therapists, because
absolutely,
I think they are incredible.
And they really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the function of the pelvic floor, or the way to strengthen it or weaken it, is due to having babies, right? And standing for long periods of time and chronic coughing and being overweight. And there's multitude of factors, neurologic conditions that can affect the pelvic floor. But it's not because of either the size of the penis or the number of partners that you've had.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think a lot of guys have concerns about having sex during periods, during pregnancy. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. Is your audience mostly male?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So obviously mine is the opposite. But
yeah.
So it's fine for a low-risk pregnancy. You know, in the absence of certain conditions, there's no reason you can't have sex during pregnancy. Now, some people feel like that makes them uncomfortable, and that's fine. I think you have to really take into account what your partner thinks, how you think, and how does it feel? Because for some people, especially when you're moving into the third trimester, can become really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
For other people, they are extremely into having sex, and that's like a great time for them. And a lot of people look very fondly on that. I think it's very individual, but nothing dangerous about it. Now, if you have a placenta previa or a low-lying placenta, you've had bleeding during pregnancy, particularly if it's undiagnosed, certainly if your water has already broken, these are like hard stop. These are bad ideas, but in most pregnancies, it's
fine. And so people would know they have a placenta previa because they'd find out from their ultrasound.
Exactly. So we see that in ultrasound, usually at the like 18 to 20 week scan. A lot of them, most of them, resolve by 32 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Previa means the placenta is overlying the cervix, and you don't want to have sex with that or do anything that could stimulate the cervix, and because it can cause massive bleeding. And so that is a very hard pregnancy condition to have for people who are interested in having sex in pregnancy. I have colleagues who say, oh, you shouldn't even orgasm. That could be dangerous. I don't think the data is really there on that. So I kind of counsel patients, you know, you can do whatever you want as long as there's no like physical penis or toy in vagina, because that's a dangerous part.
Some of the best moments in life are spontaneous, unplanned. But for men dealing with moderate to severe erectile dysfunction, or ED, preparing for intimacy can rob you and your partner of spontaneity. The joy of living in the moment. Now you can restore that spark in your relationship with the AMS 700 implant, a clinically proven permanent solution designed for your satisfaction and your partner's. It's the number one physician-preferred implant. It's built to look and feel natural. Happy partners agree. 92% of patients and 96% of their partners report sexual activity with the implant excellent or satisfactory. It gives you the ability to respond to your partner's wishes in the moment, not minutes or hours later. The AMS 700. No pills, no injections, no waiting. For more information, visit edcure.org/podcast. That's edcure.org/podcast. Sponsored by Boston Scientific.
Orgasms, I guess, I mean, they just really cause strong contractions of the pelvic floor. So are they worried that, I mean, I guess it can cause uterine contractions too, right?
Yeah, so there is some uterine stimulation there. And I guess that's the theory behind it. But I just don't think the data is there. Not enough for me to counsel someone who really wants to have other types of sex with a pregnancy complication that they can't.
Right.
Now, everybody should listen to their own doctor. You know, I always say that I'm a doctor, but I'm not your doctor. So if your doctor counsels you otherwise, then that's the advice you should follow.
Yeah. Yeah. So then since we're talking about these anatomical areas, So there is some discussion about like cervical innervation and how some people can get cervical orgasms and others can't. Talk a little bit about that.
I think everybody can. I think it's just like any other orgasm. There's people who, shockingly, you will find so many people, women, AFAB people, who have never had an orgasm, mm-hmm. despite being sexually active their whole life. And when I hear that, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have so much work to do, but it's okay. We can get there if you want to. And I think cervical orgasm is the same. So you have to know kind of what you like. Some people just don't like that because it often takes really deep penetration, which for some people is really uncomfortable, especially if you have endometriosis or certain other things. But yeah, I think anybody can. There's a lot of misconception about the innervation of the cervix. I've had people tell me, like, there's no nerve endings in the cervix, which is, every time I'm like, I think anybody who's had a colposcopic biopsy would disagree with that, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I think anybody can, but you have to, great resources. So, Beducated is wonderful. Not sponsored. OMG, yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
These are two great resources for anybody who wants their sex life to be better.
Yeah, absolutely. And then speaking of not orgasming, right? Like the percentage is like 12% of women have never had an orgasm.
I had a very good friend recently tell me that. And I was like, like, here's all these websites, go, you know. And like, what do you make of that?
I get it, right? In school, you learn about sexual education in terms of protection and in terms of consent, and you only have so much time dedicated to sexual education, but the rest of sexual education for majority or a lot of people is through pornography, which is not realistic, right? It is, you are literally seeing people penetrate, immediately climax or immediately orgasm, and then it's over. And they're simultaneously orgasming and all these things, and there's all this squirting and ejaculation volume. None of this is accurate to real life, right? So one, you're setting up a situation where like the male partner, if it's a heterosexual relationship, thinks like, that's all I need to do. And the female partner thinks something's wrong with her because she's not reaching climax. And she's like, maybe that's just it. Like, I don't know what an orgasm is. Maybe I don't really know. And so I think it's a lack of education. And then like, we're kind of a prude society.
Yeah.
Right. We don't talk about sex. We don't talk about orgasms. I mean, the fact that your friend told you, probably because you're open about talking about it, but like, most people are not talking about it.
Right. And so my take on this is I think the primary reason that there are people who have been sexually active for long periods of time and would like to have an orgasm and haven't ever experienced that is because we are taught growing up that you're not allowed to figure out your own body and what works for you. I don't think you can orgasm within a relationship, at least not in the way that I think most people would imagine a great sex life, without first doing that by yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the first step. And that's why I really like the website I was just talking about, OMG Yes, because I think they teach you in that way.
Yeah.
Like, here's the information about your body. Here are various ways to figure out what you like, what makes you tick. And then you can start to share that with a partner.
Right. It's super important. And I think the other thing that you need during a sexual encounter is to be completely vulnerable, right? Like, you have to be willing and open. And that's really hard for a lot of people.
It's hard to get out of your own head sometimes. I mean, I think we've all experienced this to some extent, especially people who, you know, are really stressed or have lots of stuff on their plate. Children make it even, you know, there's always something to be thinking about. But yeah, that vulnerable connection and ability to 100% fully trust your partner, particularly if you are having trouble with climaxing, is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. What about women who come to you and ask about first-time sex? What are some tips or tricks that you tell women about having first-time sex, or wish that you could tell all women about having first-time sex?
I think I practiced a long time in Texas. That's where I did all my training and main portion of my private practice. And I often not get people to my office before that. They would come in after having an experience that was either underwhelming or traumatic. But if I could tell people one thing, it would be, you have to learn yourself. Like, I really, really strongly encourage people, whether I grew up in and I practiced for a long time in the middle of the Bible Belt, purity culture, all of this. So I am sensitive to the fact that some people would like to wait until marriage. I don't have feelings about that. I'm very neutral about that. But if that's the group of people that you fall into, I would really strongly encourage you to learn about your own body, explore your own body first, and that communication with your partner is key. You need to be able to talk about sex. You need to be able to talk in the bedroom. You need to be able to express how you're feeling, what's going on, feeling good, feeling bad, and have somebody who's willing to slowly move there with you and not just expect mind-blowing sex the first time.
And I think communicating about sex is hard. I give a lot of tips on my channel about communication, but I'm no communication expert, and I'm sure, but we communicate with our patients all the time. But do you have, tips, tricks, things that you like to tell?
It's hard. I mean, I grew up in that culture where we didn't talk about it, and so did my husband. And so it took us a long time to get there. And I wish that was something that we had learned earlier in our relationship, but it's just being trusting and okay with vulnerability. And I think all of that just comes down to safety in the relationship. So if you're somebody who struggles with communicating about sex, you're not going to have a great experience with a one-night stand. I think one-night stand, multiple partners, whatever makes you tick is great. But if you're the person who's struggling with the communication aspect, it may not be the right time for you for that.
Yeah.
And then within a relationship, it just starts with little things, you know? I think there's a really great sex educator who has a video where she talks about, what does she call it? Sexual currency, I think she calls it. And so it's basically like flirting and things like that through the day, expressing gratitude, appreciation to your partner, or whatever it is they like. And I think this is the primary form of foreplay for a lot of women and AFAB people, because foreplay is not necessarily physical. I think a lot of people view it that way. This is going off on a tangent, but a lot of people view foreplay as like a very physical thing, and it can be. But I also think there's a lot of headspace foreplay that goes on, especially for people who are really cerebral. And I think there's a lot of men and AMAB people who also fall into that category, but we're kind of never told that that was okay because they're supposed to be visually stimulated. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of men actually do it up here too.
Absolutely.